Cutting the Curd is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country? For more information, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting Curd, live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze. On today's episode, we have Jess Perry and Emily Sharton, the 2013 to 2014 Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award Scholarship winners. How are you girls doing today?
Thank you.
doing good?
Good too. Yeah, thanks.
It's nice to speak to you both again from the ACS. For those of you who don't know, the Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award was established in order to connect cheese professionals here in the U.S. with the history, culture, and techniques in making and selling cheese abroad, sending bright cheesemakers and mongers as ambassadors of the cheese community here in the U.S. Daphne Zeppos, as I knew her, was a brilliant woman and an ambassador of so many things, and I'm sure she would have been proud of both of your accomplishments and seeing you guys both win this award. So I know, Jess, you have already been on to talk about your award when you just got it in 2013, and I want to get to a little bit of talking to you about what your experience was, but I wanted to congratulate first Emily Sharton on winning that award. How do you feel
about that? It's pretty great. been pretty overwhelming, definitely. Learning the news and then getting to go to ACS. But I'm very honored and very excited.
When I spoke to you at the ACS, you said you didn't have quite an idea of what you were going to do with the award. But before you go into that, I was wondering if maybe you could tell us how you came to apply for the award and just a little bit about your background in the cheese industry.
Sure. I started in cheese as a cheesemonger for a shop called Formaggio Kitchen in Massachusetts, in Cambridge. That was really... really a great foundation. I got to do a little bit of everything there. And then after about 4 years, I moved actually to California, where I now live, and I work in wholesale distribution for Tamales Bay Foods. So seen this industry definitely from a lot of different angles, still mostly on the trade side, less on the, you know, on the cheese making side. Knew about this award, knew kind of what it was all about. Was very interested in particular in its emphasis on teaching and education. One of the things that I was particularly involved in as a cheesemonger was education. We did a lot of classes at Formaggio Kitchen, so that was a big part of what I did. And started thinking about ideas, about sort of a proposal that I could make. My idea kind of came together, or started to come together, when I was traveling in France earlier this year, visiting shops, visiting cheesemakers and offineurs, because that is what I do on vacation.
It's a great thing to do.
It just kind of started to think about what these folks do, you know, these people who have this job in France, you know, what do they do? And a big thing that stuck out for me was the emphasis on affinage and on very sort of meticulous cheese care. So that kind of in a nutshell is what my proposal was, just to go back to France, to spend more time with these folks, to see what they do, to see how this system works for them, and what parts of it we can maybe bring back and incorporate here in the U.S. You know, how can we make our trade stronger? Clearly there are a lot of folks doing this already in the U.S., what about this system can we...
Well, it's always good to get a different perspective, especially a historical perspective, I think.
Yeah.
Jess, you came in as a cheesemaker, and you're still a cheesemaker. You were really interested in the chemistry and the science of cheesemaking. I would be correct in assuming that, right?
Yeah, my undergrad's in chemistry. So when I first started making cheese in Maine at Silver Moon Creamery, I definitely was interested in the chemistry aspects of it, for sure. Yeah, and how, and then with my DZTA, it was more like how the environment affects, you know, how you make cheese in a certain area.
I thought it was interesting, and for after listening to your earlier interview with Anne, about how interested you were in the chemistry and the science of making cheese, and yet you went to the Basque Country, a place where I've always been taught, at least in the French cheeses that I've bought, that the recipes and the cheese making processes there were a little bit more like proprietary, that they're the cooperative of shepherds that would sort of pass the recipes down to the cheesemakers, and it was harder. Maybe it was a more process-oriented thing. Did you find that to be true?
Yes, absolutely. besides the fact that there was, you know, language barrier, all I could really gain regarding the chemistry of things and recipe was just visual observation. they were definitely, they liked, very private people for sure, and kept their secrets. So when it came to presenting, I had to, like, I definitely had to approach it differently, you know, besides the chemistry. I had to be like, well, what else did I learn? So I agree. Yeah, they're very private people.
Well, I mean, when I bought Pyrenees cheeses in the past and I met some of the producers, that's the thing. I mean, I was taught that even amongst the shepherds, even amongst the co-ops, sometimes people just don't get the recipes. They just have to give their milk up to other people to make the cheese. So I thought that was an interesting point. Would you say to Emily that she should be prepared for maybe somewhat less inclusive experience when she gets over there? Maybe just have to watch and see.
Yeah, I definitely think flexibility is key, and just go with the flow, you know, take what you can, and realize, like, your initial vision may not be what you thought it would be in the end, but still, you know, enjoying every moment.
Of course, it's a trip to Europe. Yeah. I mean,
I know, right? Jesus, right?
Like, you know?
France, hello.
Where, Emily, where are you? I know you haven't planned it out, but where do you think you're going to go? You're going to go to, like, the Loire River Valley, or are you going to stick around in and around Paris, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, all of those things. Yeah, I mean, you know, Paris. I think definitely just because, as you said, you know, just because of the history, you know, because there are so many shops there that have been doing this for generations, you know, but there are clearly, you know, Offenor is based in other parts of the country that I'd be very interested in spending time with. Hervé Mont has been a big supporter of the DZTA, you know,
yeah.
I'm very much hoping that will be, you know, a stop. But yeah, still trying to kind of figure out. I mean, I would love to go as many places as I can. So still trying to figure out, you know, how best to make that work.
Well, Jess, it's funny. Like, you got your award, you got your scholarship, and then you went to Europe. I'm interested to know. And then for other people who may be applying for the award, how would just the nuts and bolts of it work? I mean, you got given a grant, and you use that money, I assume, also to fly over there. And who set up your meetings and your, you know, how did you get all of that worked out? I just am curious to know.
Well, Jason Hines helped me out a lot.
Is he your point person when you get to Europe?
What
was he like, your point person when you get over to Europe, or did you your preliminary work with Jason?
I did my preliminary work with Jason and his Spanish cheese importer at Neil's Yard, Roy. And I do not say his last name right. I'm sorry, Roy. But Cruyera, I think. Yeah, I'm
That's
terrible.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. And so basically Roy put me in touch with two cheesemakers and one cheese distributor in Spain. But both, they're all over Spain, like one in Catalonia, and then Cantabria, and then in the middle, more close to Madrid. I'm blanking on the region right there. But we basically, the iPhone app, WhatsApp, is how we communicated for a month or so before I left, just trying to confirm. And you know, like, a lot of, within the English language alone, there's a lot of loss in translation when it comes to texting. So only imagine what that would be like when you're trying to talk to Spaniards. It wasn't entirely easy, and I had to, it was very repetitive of like, so this is what's going on, right? But I had this one, Alvaro, which he's out of Cantabria, and his creamery is called La Jaladilla. He was my main guy, and he helped me a lot with the Basque region. But
What kind of cheese did he make there?
It was a cow milk cheese producer. Their like cash cow, like main cheese that they make is a queso fresco style.
Okay.
Very fresh, super buttery. It was delicious. His wife makes butter, delicious butter. And then he was experimenting with aged cheeses, kind of a, they call it a wild rind cheeses, where it was like a little bit firm on the outside but soft and creamy on the inside. And yeah, he called like a couple of the Basque cheesemakers that I visited to confirm and stuff like that. So
I had one more question for you in regards to that. When I listened to your earlier interview, you know, one of the reasons I believe you said why you chose the region is because there is a Basque population in the Intermountain West, which is a term I've never heard or used before I listened to that. There was a lot of Basque folks in Utah, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So were you able to make the connection between the Basque shepherds that you met over there and the people that are in and around you in Utah?
A little bit, yeah. I reached out to Marcia Barnaga in California, but then I also reached out to this woman, Monique Lexalt, who is the daughter of Robert Lexalt, who's a famous Basque American historian and author. He has multiple books that are really great. But I talked to her about the Basque culture, and she's a lawyer, but she also works with the Center of Basque Studies at the University of Nevada in Reno. And I was able to make the connection there of, like, wondering, in similar in the West, just they are in Spain, they're very private people. So it wasn't until recently that I was able to tap into the Utah Basque Club. But Monique was definitely very insightful into the culture and, like, community that's around, you know, Nevada, Montana, Idaho, and Utah and Wyoming.
Cool. And for anyone that doesn't know, Jess is a cheesemaker at Beehive in Utah. And I was wondering also, did your experience change the way you make cheese?
Yes, absolutely. We're definitely thinking of some new ideas here at Beehive, and there's going to be a little bit of Basque influence into the cheeses that we produce for sure.
What? Mm-hmm. How so? Just in the styles or in the?
Not necessarily the style. Just because the Basque make is predominantly sheep's milk cheese.
Right.
We're sticking with the cow's milk, but I'm going to try to incorporate the fact that they, you know, the open air age, and there's the brining and the drying happens a little bit longer, and just try to build a natural rind in this very dry environment.
In the high desert.
Yep.
Try to get some stuff
desert
to grow
yep
there. That's cool. And Emily is working at the Tamales Bay Creamery, and I mean Tamales Bay Foods, in up in Point Reyes Station. And I was wondering, just what do you? I know I've asked you this before, but what do you want to learn more about aging cheeses so that you can bring that back to Tamales Bay?
You know, I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure how that how that will work yet. I think at this point, you know, it's as I said, more just learning about this sort of this stage of cheese care, you know, kind of as a point between cheesemaker and consumer, you know, and sort of how, you know, how that works. I mean, in the U.S., you know, a lot of it happens with the cheesemaker currently, but, you know, is there a role that that a distributor or a retailer can play? Is there more of a role that somebody in that position can play? I think that's kind of the main thing I'm interested in. I mean, clearly in the U.S. we're faced with a lot of, you know, potential regulatory issues, you know, and things that are going to be slightly different from how it's set up in France.
But you worked up at Formaggio Kitchen, right? Formaggio Kitchen in Boston and Cambridge, and they have an aging cave there, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and that program has evolved a lot. I mean, when I was there, at least, it was less, sort of actively aging, young cheese. It was more just a way, a lot of it was a way just to sort of hold cheese and care for it, when it arrived. You know, it was a way that we could store it in proper conditions. I know that program, like I said, has evolved a lot since I've left, and I think it's changed. They're doing different things now. But clearly there are different places in the U.S. that are doing this to varying degrees. I know Murray's has a very extensive program. I've been reading a lot about what Wegmans is doing, in upstate New York. Interested in seeing all of these models, figuring out sort of how. What happens in Europe, how these folks who have been doing this for many years can influence how similar programs develop in the U.S.
I feel like there's less and less affineurs in Europe. I feel, or that there's fewer than there were when I went and visited, or the first time I went over, I think it was like in 99. But I feel like some of these people have folded up shop. And when I've interviewed other people this summer, they've spoken about the transferring of a lot of knowledge into the United States, both on a cheese making and a cheesemongering level. But do you want to check out any cheese making operations? Is that something that interests you, or you like to be a cheesemonger better?
Sure. No, I'm always interested in cheese making for sure. Because I mean, ultimately, I feel like that is who we are working for as cheesemongers. You know, as distributors, we always should be thinking about how we can be getting these cheeses to the end, the end consumer in their best condition. So yes, for sure. I mean, I'm always interested in seeing cheese making. It's just professionally something, it's an area that I've had less sort of, professional involvement in. I've staged at with cheesemakers for sure, but I haven't made cheese on a professional basis. But yeah, I mean, and to go to your point too of the affineurs kind of disappearing, that certainly is something that kind of influenced my thinking. As I was putting this proposal together, I actually found a piece that Daphne had written for The Atlantic that talked about that very phenomenon, just of a lot of this business kind of disappearing, which made me think even more about sort of the urgency of...
Well, you got to get over there while they're still there, basically. You got to catch these guys while they're still in business, unfortunately.
Right, yeah.
So we're about halfway through. We're going to take a short break, but I want to get you guys to stick around, and we'll be back in a minute with more Cutting the Curd. Cheers.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, live on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm on the line with Jess Perry of Beehive and Emily Shorten of Tamales Bay Foods, and we're just talking about the Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award. Jess was the winner in 2013. Emily is this year's winner. One just got back from Europe. One's going to go to Europe real soon, or at least she's threatening to. I can't get her to tell me where exactly she's going to go. But I wanted to ask you a question, Jess, not so much for me, but for Emily. I was wondering if you had any advice, as you were the first winner, which is always a cool thing, I think, to be the first. But it you know, you're if there's anything to learn, you're the one who's going to have to teach it to the next winners. So if you have any advice for Emily on her trip and how to make the most out of her scholarship.
Yeah, I mean, definitely reach out to committee members and ask if they have any contacts. I think I didn't really know if, you know, with the first one, there's not a whole lot of rules, as you said, and no one's ever done it before, so you don't really know what to do.
That's the best way to operate that.
I was like, what? But I definitely reach out to committee members. You know, they're there for you, and if they don't know someone, they'll know someone who does. I also think it's really important to be flexible, you know, when you're there. And then also budget yourself, for sure. I mean, you know your own financial restrictions. And in Europe, you know, with the exchange rate right now, that money can go really fast. So know what you can and cannot do. But, yeah, like I said in my, like, announcement, you know, just have fun. I mean, Daphne would want you to have that extra glass of wine for sure.
That's the thing. I wondered, you know, because like Daphne was an old friend of mine, and I wondered, like, did you feel like, were you thinking of her while you were there? Were you thinking of her and why you applied for the scholarship and that you won? I mean, I'm sure you were, but maybe you could expound on that for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking of her. And in fact, Alvaro, the cheesemaker that I mentioned who hooked me up with a lot of the best cheesemakers, Daphne had come and visited him before. So there was this really kind of, you know, eerie
the residue of Daphne.
There, you know, it's yeah. Like I immediately went on the farm and it just felt really right. And I got goosebumps and, you know, Daphne had been here before. And so I'm going to this place that, you know, she had seen and she probably, you know, asked more questions than me, but you know, I was still in like, oh my god, I'm in Spain. But absolutely, yeah, I was thinking of her for sure. She, you know, she went the extra mile to go, you know, visit these cheesemakers and learn what they were doing. So I just tried to have that same courage when I was hesitant on trying to find places.
No, that's pretty cool. I mean, like when I know that you. You obviously you won the scholarship, so you did well. But when you were applying, what inspired you to apply? Was it just the travel, or was it also her message?
I think her message. You know, she had such a great connection with cheese. Her own heritage as well as just, you know, this connection with farmers and producers. And when I was thinking of my vision, that's definitely what I had in mind. Like, why cheese? Why did I choose cheese as my career and my profession and my passion? And what does it mean to me? And so what I was really passionate about, which I think is starting to boom here in the West, is there's more and more cheesemakers just popping up around the American West. So I wanted to make this connection between a place that I've grown to love, just the mountains and honestly the skiing, let's be honest. But
yeah,
I love
you always mention the skiing anytime I talk to you or in any interview. So, I mean, that's a good place to be, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I wanted just to make this connection because it was cheese making is like this cheese scene is just starting. So I wanted to be a part of that and help it along somehow. And being an ambassador for Western cheesemakers.
That's pretty cool. Emily, mm-hmm. Did you feel the same way when you, like, why did you apply? I mean, obviously you did, you came through well too, because you won too. But were you thinking along those same lines that you wanted to proffer that legacy?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I liked, you know, that the award, you know, it was very much about education. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a huge thing. And I know that was a, you know, obviously a huge part of what Daphne did, you know, sharing this information, you know, with, you know, people in the industry, with, you know, people who eat cheese, you know, just with everyone. So, you know, that definitely was a large part of the, you know, my interest in applying. I only met Daphne actually only once. but I am continually, you know, just amazed by the number of people.
Where did you meet her?
I met her, actually, it was just after I arrived in California. It was at a class at the Chi School of San Francisco.
Chi School of San Francisco. What year was that?
That must have been it was in 2011 when I moved here. So, it was that fall. But I am, you know, I continually meet people who have, who have worked with her, including, you know, Deborah Dickerson, who is our sales manager here at
Tomorrow's Day. It's your gal. I had her on last week.
Yes, exactly. One of her closest friends and coworkers. So, just a number of people who have been influenced by Daphne, who have worked with her, you know, mentored by her, continues to impact me.
It's so funny when I've talked to you because I order cheese from you a lot. when I talk to you about that, you're very different, and I could be wrong, but you seem kind of surprised that you won this, or like I that you won the scholarship. Is it? But
I mean I am. As I said, it's been a little overwhelming. I guess. It's interesting because I guess you don't apply without considering the possibility that you might win.
No, that's why you apply.
but still, you know, I know that there was very stiff competition. You know, I obviously, you know, there were a lot of applicants, and I'm not as familiar with all of the, you know, the other proposals, but I'm sure they were all wonderful.
Well, it doesn't matter. You're the winner.
It is a tremendous honor.
That's great. No, I think it's interesting. But I mean, that's your style. I totally get that. I also like the fact that the first winner was a cheesemaker and the second winner was a cheesemonger, because both of you will have a totally different, a different experience, when you go there. I was wondering, Jess, if you could just tell me, what do you think the next step is for you, just to keep on going? Is it to take your the things that you learned in the Basque country and apply them to Beehive? Or are you what are you thinking? What's your future?
Well, I'm.
I know you're not moving anywhere flat, but that's about it. You know.
Wait, what?
I said, I know you're not moving anywhere without mountains to ski on.
Yeah, but... yes. There will be no, yes, mountains are a must. But I'm talking to the Utah Basque Club next month, and I hope from that experience, you know, one, I have to completely redo my presentation because I'm not talking to a cheese audience. I'm talking to a Basque audience, so, you know, I cannot screw that one up. But I'm really interested in what they have to teach me, because I know I learned a lot over in Spain, but I know that I'm going to be able to learn so much more about the culture here in the American West. So then I hope from there I learn more about the Basque culture, you know, in Idaho and Utah, Wyoming and Montana, and I'm able to talk to those, like the regions, clubs in each state, and just learn more about their culture. But I also definitely plan on trying to influence, like the techniques that I learned in Spain will definitely influence the cheeses that I make at Beehive from here on out. And not only that, I hope to reach out to, you know, a lot of the other Western producers and see what they do and kind of work together in trying to build a great community of cheesemakers out here in the drier climates.
That's cool. It sounds like the award got you out of your element and out of things you were comfortable with. It got you traveling, you speaking to people in their obscure language that you had to figure out, and you had to get across at least one mountain range and find some cheesemakers. You did all of that. You made cheese while you were there, I imagine.
Unfortunately, I didn't. They wouldn't even...
That's the thing. They wouldn't let you near.
They were so private that they didn't let me do that.
That's funny. I wondered that. But in and of itself, you got there, and you have a lot to bring back, which is super cool. And I'm sure you'll take it far. And Emily, you're going to go somewhere. You're going to go.
Yes. I just have to figure out where. I'm thinking it'll probably be early next spring. And as Jess said, you know, it's kind of just a matter of figuring out, you know, kind of how it's going to all fit together. So,
Well, if I could give you one bit of advice, or at least maybe a place you want to go. One time when I was traveling there,
sure.
I was in northern France, and I went to Boulogne and visited a gentleman named Philippe Olivier, who has a crazy little aging cellar right there almost on the ocean. So, and I really liked it up there in the north part of France. So I don't know if you find yourself up there, you can stay in a monastery, you know, and do that. I don't know if that interests you at all.
Yeah, no, that sounds great.
And if you want to take me along with you just to show you how to get there.
Me too.
Well, gals, I want to thank both of you for coming on today. I really appreciate it. I know I talked to you at the ACS briefly, but I was really glad you came in. And I want to make sure that to all our listeners that you go online and donate to the Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award.org. It's a great thing. I believe they've almost reached their goals for the year, but it's just fantastic. And I want to thank you guys for listening to Cutting the Curd, live on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.